Today's podcast is one of my favorites because I get to join with an Arizona State University attorney as we just bash on the Big Ten. It is my take that the Big Ten has something in common with Biff from Back to the Future, a bully, and also an idiot. And I'm going to unpack why that is the case in today's Debriefing of the Law, College Football Edition. All right, welcome to this week's Debriefing of the Law. I am Joel Oster, your host, and today I have a good friend of mine on as a guest, Christopher Marone. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You are one of three people in the United States that pronounce my last name correctly, and none of them are my wife. So it works out.
That is just a guess. I was just guessing because you're Christopher. I mean, I put you in my phone as Christopher. I call you by the first name. And so I thought I was going to butcher your last name, but hey, I got it right.
Nailed it.
By the way, how do you pronounce my last name? Do you have any idea?
It's Oster, right? O-S-T-E-R? Oster?
That is true. And I know I just said it, but that still did not get you off the hook. I have gone to restaurants where I told them my name was Oster. I even spelled it out for them. And that same person, 2 minutes later, would say, Oster, party of three, Oster, party of three. So, hey, but you got it right. And so thank you so much. Well, I don't know.
I remember that first time that we met, and I for a second there, I'm like, is it really Joel Oster? And I'm like, are you that Houston preacher? And
I know.
It took me a minute. And then we made the joke, and then it stuck in my head that it's Oster because you're not the Houston preacher.
I am not. I do not have Elvis Presley hair. But
no.
Yes, that is my one standard joke wherever I go. I can always use it. It never fails to work. I even was at a comedy club recently. I mean, we're talking a comedy club. Have you ever done open mic night at a comedy club?
I've been there. I've never done it.
You got to do it. I'm telling you, you have not lived until you've tried to make a room full of drunk college kids laugh. I'm telling you what, that is pressure that will prepare you for the United States Supreme Court. Well, I was at a comedy club doing open mic night, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to start with my Joel Osteen joke. I'm just feeling a little bit nervous here. I don't know what else to say. I'm going to start off with my Joel Osteen joke, and it worked. Even they laughed. They got it. And so, it's my standard. It's a goldie, but an oldie. Well, you are the director of College of Law Career Services for ASU. At least that's what your website says. So what is it that you do?
So I work in our career services department at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. Mainly my job is to develop employer relations with the law school to allow different pathways and different careers for our law students and alumni. So at the end of the day, I do a lot of schmoozing and sucking up to different law firms throughout the country and getting jobs for our law students.
You are good at that. Now you're a good schmoozer. So that's why I want to be your friend, man. So if I ever need a job,
I got you.
You're the guy I can go to.
I got you.
The podcasting business isn't quite what I thought. You know, I need a job somewhere. Well, before we go to the job market, because I am very curious about that. You mentioned Sandra Day O'Connor, have you met her?
I have. Actually, funny story was. We moved into a new building in downtown Phoenix about 4.5 years ago in 2016. And, you know, we're all unpacking our old offices from when we were at the Tempe campus now to the downtown Phoenix campus. And I'm in there on a Saturday and I'm unpacking my office and I'm literally wearing a shirt that said "Lead Like Sandra." And it was a small running of shirts that they did for the law school to kind of like just make us all feel good about this big move. Oh, always trying to brown nose. So I'm in my office, I'm unpacking. I think I have like the Macklemore Pandora station just blaring in my office. It's Saturday. I'm the only person there. All of a sudden, I see somebody walk past my office. So I go to turn and there's Justice O'Connor. There's her son. There's a couple people. There's the dean of the law school. And it's like right in the middle of the most like vulgar part of the song. And it's like the absolute like worst possible moment I can think of. And at this point, Justice O'Connor's in a wheelchair, and she still is. Yes. And so they're pushing her around. She's getting up there in years, and there she goes, just right by my office. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, and the dean goes, oh, this is Chris Marone here, and talked a little bit, and I got to shake her hand. But I was like, this couldn't have happened at a better moment. Could I have not rocking out some Macklemore, setting up pictures in my office? That's awesome.
Right. What a great ending to this story. What it could have been is if she had then finished the song lyrics. Now, that I would have dropped dead. We're going to stop the podcast. We're going to end right there. That would be the greatest story to tell. But apparently she did not do that.
No, she just kept on rolling. And I wanted her to leave as quickly as humanly. Like, I just wanted her to go, and I wanted to go and hide and hope she never thinks of me again.
Well, she,
because that's not the way I want a Supreme Court justice to remember me, is the random 6-foot-tall, 300-pound white guy rapping along to Macklemore in the most vulgar sense of the word.
All right. Interesting. You know, we had a case this last year at the Supreme Court. Iancu v. Brunetti. Did you follow that case?
I did not.
That is the case involving whether a T-shirt designer sought a trademark for the word F-U-C-T. Now, Chris, I'm just curious about this. F-U-C-T. Apparently, that is the past tense of a a bad word, apparently.
Yes.
And so the issue, from my perspective, is, and of course, he was denied the trademark for that word. He said it was immoral, as offensive. So we filed a lawsuit saying, denying me a trademark because you find this word offensive is unconstitutional. By the way, they won on that issue.
Yes.
But from my perspective, what I was curious about was, would you actually say that word in open court?
I'm sure they did.
Would you say it? If you're in open court, if the United States Supreme Court, all the solemnness, the solemnity, right? The nine justices up there, the halls of justice. And would you drop the F-bomb?
Yeah. If I was representing, well, it depends on what side I'm on. Am I representing the clothing company? Or am I representing the U.S. government?
All right. And why would it be different?
Because if I was representing the U.S. government, I would say it doesn't reach the decorum of the court. That's why we're here, that the trademark board has a right against immoral and offensive content being trademarked. So I'm not even going to dignify the word here in court because it's immoral and offensive.
Makes sense.
But if I was the other side, I would drop it like it was the third word of every sentence that I had.
Hey, we have no problem with this whatsoever. Interestingly enough, at least from my perspective, they just danced around it. In fact, I will play for our listeners what they actually said. But I don't have it taped for you to play it. But they, nonetheless, the court themselves refused to say it. They would not say the word. They danced around it. I do think that if I were there, I probably would spell it out, maybe F-U-C-T.
Yeah.
I don't know. But hey, interesting concept.
Did they have the same concept when they did Cohen? When Cohen versus California was up at the Supreme Court, did they drop the F the draft, or did they say F the draft?
It's definitely in the pleading, but I believe the opinion was during oral argument, they did not say it. I'll have to double check that and look it up. But I believe they made reference to, even in that case, the Chief Justice, and I forget the Chief Justice's
Berger.
Name. Okay. Still said, no, we're not going to say that word. This is the halls of justice. It's beneath us. So I think they refused to say, at least the court members themselves. I don't know what the attorneys did in that regard. Hey, you know what? This is what entertains us. Are you going to drop the F-bomb as a lawyer? Well, that's a perfect segue to, how is the legal market? I mean, that is your job. Is it looking good during these times of COVID? Bad? What are the emerging trends? Any word for lawyers when it comes to finding a job?
Yeah. So Phoenix market is blowing up. It is. Okay. I mean, we are incredibly busy. We saw zero change in recruiting and hiring of law students, recent graduates, and first-year bar passers.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we posted our highest employment numbers ever this year at 89.8 or something like that of the graduating class receiving employment post-graduation within 3 months of graduating.
Interesting.
So we crushed it with the employment numbers. But what we're seeing a lot of is the new guard, all the, and I hate this phrase, but I use it. It's the millennial lawyers. Anybody who's like 45 or younger has adapted to this technology world of remote working and telework and being able to meet clients and adapting right. so much better than some of the older guard, that we're seeing a lot of these 3, 4, 5 person law firms all of a sudden needing 3, 4, 5, 6 more lawyers because they can meet the demand of people who are still getting arrested. They're still going through divorces. They're still I mean, the wills and trust market has blown up.
Interesting.
Especially in no political commentary at all here is that with Arizona, people are going back to school. People are going back to elementary schools. They're going back to high schools. And so we're seeing a lot of estate plans being brought up because some of these teachers didn't have it before. So you're seeing a great influx.
Wow.
And the number of teachers making estate plans because of the thought of them going back in person or being forced in person back into the classroom is an issue for them.
Interesting. Wow. So it's almost too morbid to even think about, but you're right. saying these teachers are going back to school. And so, yes, you know what? I have a checklist of things I need to make sure I do. I buy school supplies, get new outfits, make sure my will is done. Apparently, that is one of the items that you got to check off the list.
Durable and power of attorneys, living wills, the whole nine yards are coming through right now.
Wow. Interesting. Are you a Seinfeld fan?
Am I a Seinfeld? Yes. Love me some Seinfeld.
Oh, I've been during this pandemic, we all got to entertain ourselves, right? Uh-huh. So I've been rewatching every single episode of Seinfeld, and I just saw the episode recently. Or do you remember where Kramer was watching a videotape, and in the videotape, the person wanted to die, but they would not let him die because he did not have a living will?
Yes.
Yes, I love that episode. And so he decided to get Elaine to be the executor. I don't know if I'm using that word correctly, on his living will. And she was like, yep, plug him, rip it out. Let's just rip it out. Yeah. So, hey, you know what? It's good for business, apparently, right now. I'm not trying to make light of that situation. But nonetheless, my wife and I, we did take a trip. This is a long time ago now. And we were going to fly. And I do remember before we took off on this trip, she wanted to make sure we had our will done. It's like, really? Is that something you want to do before you take a trip? Make sure your will is done. That's kind of a bad start to a trip. Right. But I don't know.
It's a wonderful start to a police investigation, though. So you had the will done before you left for the trip, huh?
Exactly. That was my point.
Yeah.
Right, that's what they always say in the funeral. Like, oh, this person just wrote this before he passed away. It's almost like he knew what was coming. And so I thought, you know what? If I never do my will, I can't die. Surely that's how it works. But 100%. Obviously, yeah, no, it's not a good idea. We are lawyers, so definitely get those wills done early. Always. Well, that is it. That is a great segue to COVID. I mean, I am from Kansas City, so I don't really know how things are going. I have not left my house in probably 6 months. How are things down there in Arizona? How are you? Are you guys still playing golf?
Oh, we are. Well, you got to preference that with we had 51 straight days of over 110 degrees.
Really?
So we are still playing golf, but the general assumption is that in 110 degrees, nothing really lives.
Right. That is a good point.
And so we're going with it. And I mean, I'm a sucker. I can't pass up a $10 cart fee plus green fees of a grand total of $12 for 18 holes.
Yes.
At 10 a.m. when it's 110 degrees, I may sweat a lot, but you can't go wrong with that.
The heat does not impact me. When I interned down in Dallas, Texas, when I was in law school, I'd go out there and play, be over 100 degrees, and it's like, this doesn't bother me at all. And the golf courses were empty at 2 in the afternoon, so I had the entire course to myself. Maybe it's very similar down there in Arizona. The retired people.
Packed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's hard to get a tee time after. So getting a tee time between 5 a.m. and 10 a.m., impossible. Never going to happen. Those are always taken up by the people who can't take the heat. But then you get the 10 a.m.s to like 4 p.m.s, and I would say it's probably – I would say you'd have like a open hole between you and maybe the next group.
Interesting.
If you're having a good game, you're catching up to people fast. Or if you're playing like me, they're catching up to you.
So the courses are open right now, right?
Courses are open. I actually believe we just reopened everything. Movie theaters are back open. Bars are opening back up. Restaurants have been open for several months. Today was the first day of school for a lot of local charter schools and some of the school districts. For sure, the school districts are going back. Well, not for sure, but they are slated to reopen after Labor Day. The rest of the government-ran, non-charter school, non-private school schools are opening up on the 8th. Okay. And students are going back, and there's obviously huge trepidation on all sides.
Right.
Just trying to make sure that we're doing the best we can.
It is a somewhat uncertain time, I think, largely due to fear porn. Have you heard that term before, fear porn?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
There has been a lot. Now, I understand why our entire world was shut down, at least the United States was shut down, back around March. I mean, with March Madness coming up, I got to tell you, it really hurt myself because my KU Jayhawks were the best basketball team in the nation. We were the number one seed, and, yeah, the entire season was ripped from us. Well, but I kind of understood that because we didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know how dangerous this was going to be. But looking back on it, here is my thought. Now, have you ever seen these memes where you have some guy sitting at a table out there, like on in a public park, and he has a sign that says, "Whatever, change my mind."
Right.
You seen that meme?
Yes, of course.
All right. So I want to do something similar here. I want to tell you what I think. And maybe just ask you to either change my mind or show 100% total agreement with me. But nonetheless, this is my take. Change my mind on this. I think in the future, we're going to look back to our response to COVID-19, and we are going to say this was the worst policy decision of all time. I mean, this rivals invading Iraq because of the weapons of mass destruction, which turned out were not there. And so this is going to rival that as one of the worst decisions in our lifetime. Change my mind. Do you agree? Disagree?
So I think it's twofold. I think that I agree in some parts and disagree in some parts. The part that I think is the worst part of the policy decision is I don't feel there was ever really a decision made. It was kind of like hobbled together, and we kind of tried to like play it out, and then we politicked it out, and then we politicked it back in, and then we kind of tried to unpack it and then repack it and then package it a different way. And I just felt like the dissemination of information was just fumbled from the get-go.
Right. So, I totally agree with that.
Right off the bat. And then once we fumbled it from the get-go, the floodgates were open, right? Everybody who had a YouTube channel was all of a sudden an expert on COVID.
Right.
And so I think that the policy decision to shut down, I think, was a giant reaction to the fact that we literally fumbled the ball on the first play of the game.
Yes.
And it was and then it turned into the New England Patriots taking on St. Mary's School for the Blind. And it was it was literal just pounding. So I think that's what makes it the worst policy decision ever, is because we embrace this idea that everyone who has a microphone is an expert. And since all the experts are saying different things, we have no decision to make.
I think clearly this caught us off guard, caught us with our pants down, if you will. And that definitely led to a lot of uncertainty. But it's not just in the United States. It's worldwide.
Worldwide.
We had this uncertainty. No one had any idea how to handle this. So I do get the fact that we made decisions out of an abundance of caution because we just did not know. So I get that. But now we're 6 months later. And again, I'm just assuming that a couple years down the road, we're going to look back to our reaction to COVID-19, and we're going to say this was the worst possible policy decision of all time. At least that's my perspective. That's my guess. I could be totally wrong on that. But my thought on what happened was it started over there in Wuhan, and there was this outbreak. People didn't know how to handle this and thought maybe they could handle it there. It then somehow got to Italy, to that elderly population, Yep. Ransacked it. I mean, and people were dying left and right. And so hospitals and morgues were filled and the entire world panicked. If that's going to come to us, we better shut down. Well, I think, again, this is just my perspective, but I think we're going to look back on this time and say, you know what, the elderly population, the at-risk population, we should have dealt with them. We should have protected them, and that should have been how our policy decisions should have been designed, to protect the at-risk population. But outside of that population, we would have been better off as a society allowing things to just go forward. I saw an interesting stat this morning. I don't know if you've mask. Now, let me just back up here for a second. The mask wearing, have you ever seen anything as ridiculous as mask wearing being a political issue? How has that been politicized? Do you have any help for me?
No, because, again, it's everybody who thinks they're an expert on now constitutional law that was an expert 5 minutes ago on medical. Like, everybody believes that, or not everybody, I shouldn't say, a section of the population or cross-section of the population believes that somehow asking people to wear a mask is tyranny.
Right. I mean, Chris, I've never driven with you in your car that I know of. Maybe I have, I just don't remember it. But do you wear your seatbelt?
I do.
What? Why? Is that not an affront to your liberties?
It's government overreach all day long.
Right. I don't understand why wearing a mask is somehow a threat to our liberty. I just don't get it.
I like to bring it down to the even next level and go, last time I checked, it's no shirt, no shoes, no service. Right, and if we're a society that believes that private industry has the ability to regulate who they do and do not interact with, as we saw with the Colorado case, and the cake baking, right? Then if Costco says wear a mask, it's their business.
It is. Apparently.
This is how it works. And if they don't want that customer base of people who don't wear masks, that's, again, their business plan.
Right. They have that right to do that. I just do not get it. I saw a very interesting study. It just came out recently. And so I'm sure this will be developed more in the future. But this is what this study said. This is why wearing masks, I think, is a great idea, even beyond just, hey, the government says do it, and I'm going to respect my fellow brothers and sisters and not make them scared of me, so I'm going to wear it. Beyond that, it's actually a real solid idea, and this is why. That it's not necessarily that you catch the virus, it's how much of the virus you catch. And the studies are starting to show that makes a huge difference. So in other words, let's say you don't have a mask and someone coughs right into your face. So you get a full mouth load of coronavirus.
Right.
That's bad. You've gotten a lot of that virus. It's going to impact your body in a very, possibly in a very severe way. But let's say they're wearing a mask, you're wearing a mask, they're 6 feet away, and one of those little virus particles floats in the air, lands on your mask, finds a way to worm its way through, and you catch the virus.
Right.
Studies are showing that makes a difference, because if you just get one little virus and not a mouthful of virus, I'm probably using these terms incorrectly, but whatever, they're showing that now that the cases of coronavirus are a lot less severe, and that might be why, because people are wearing masks, so you're getting a lot less of it than you would have otherwise. And I got to tell you, that's totally made me rethink the importance of wearing a mask.
Well, and I also think any time that I've gone to the doctors and got a flu and I've had the flu, the doctor has advised me that if I'm going to be out in public, I should wear a mask so that way I don't spread the – it's like my mother's gone through cancer treatment. My best friend's gone through cancer treatment. While they were getting treated, they all wore masks so that way they wouldn't pick something up from someone else.
Right.
I don't see how any of that is tyranny.
No,
I don't
it's
see how
not.
Any of that is it. And even if you look to other countries, when you're sick in Japan or you're sick in China or you're sick in other places, they wear masks out of respect for their community, saying, I may be well enough to go out, but maybe I'm not well enough, and I don't know what your immune system is.
Yes.
And America is so wonderful about making you feel bad when you call in sick to work that we don't want to call in sick.
Right,
so wear a mask when you're around other people, too.
I tell you, it is interesting. Well, I do think, though, that Again, we're going to look back to this time period, 5 years down the road, and we're going to say our decisions were the worst policy decisions in recent memory. That's just my prediction. It could come true. Unfortunately, when you do podcasts, it's going to be out there for all time. But nonetheless, this is a perfect segue to what I really want to talk about. And I might be on this for the next several weeks. But nonetheless, the Big Ten. I got to tell you, the Big Ten, I think, are bullies. Let's talk about the Big Ten. Now, first of all, Chris, what are your thoughts on the Big Ten? What are your allegiances? I know you work for ASU. Are you a Pac-12 person?
I am. Pac-12 through and through.
All right. So what are your thoughts of the Big Ten?
I mean, they're just another conference that we're going to destroy. So eventually the Big Ten is going to be assimilated into the one true conference, which is Pac-12.
So you're delusional. I will make sure I delete that from this podcast because I don't want to ruin your credibility, and I'm afraid you just exposed yourself. But nonetheless, so here's the Big Ten. I think they are bullies. Now, they obviously, they canceled all fall sports. So I want to unpack the legalities around that. Let's just talk some law and also just some common sense. Did they not really just screw up?
I understand. First off, yes, horrible, horrible decision. And I felt because they made the decision in April.
Right.
The decision wasn't made when the season started, either for some schools a week ago or in a couple weeks for Pac-12. They made the decision when we were still making this horrible policies about what COVID is and is not. Right. So they decided, and maybe they didn't make it known to the world or whatever, but those backdoor conversations were happening where they're like, there's no football. There's no way we're going to have football. We have no clue how this disease is going to roll out. We have no clue. We're going to cancel basketball. Don't even talk about baseball, and let's just move right through until Christmas.
I mean, they have what? And this is why I think the parents were so mad. So for our listeners, let's just back up a little bit here. It was the first week of August, and a rumor went out there that the Big Ten was meeting with all the other five or other four, so five total major sports conferences, right? Your Power Five. And they wanted to talk about canceling the fall sports season. And, rumor, the thought is the Big Ten is trying to bully the other conferences into joining with them because, as you already alluded to, they already had their mind made up. They weren't going to do this. They did not want to do any sports. For whatever reason, we can have fun guessing as to why that might be. They wanted to cancel fall sports, but nonetheless, that's what they wanted to do. The Pac-12 joined them and said, we'll go ahead and we'll cancel sports. But the other three, the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, did not cancel sports. So that was in the first of August. And so now this is September, beginning of September. They just started college football. And my first thought is, and this is why the parents of Nebraska, of like eight Nebraska football players, sued the Big Ten because they wanted to find out, why did you make this decision? And I think that's what has bothered a lot of us is, all right, Big Ten, what stats were you looking at? Because we're looking at the stats. I have followed the stats meticulously. What stat are you looking at that has you so fearful about healthy 20-year-old guys? What is the risk? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think that the conferences were trying to figure out a dollars and cents. Is it worth it? If we cancel fans' attendance at the games, how much are we losing in concessions, in ticket holding, in advertising? How much are we losing XYZ money? And I think that's what it came down to, was that their zero drop-off point, that number, especially for the Big Ten or even maybe the Big 12, obviously the Pac-12, even though the Big 12 didn't sign on, I think they're in that same boat. But the dollars and cents numbers wasn't going to make sense. ASU's football schedule, if you look out of conference games, that's half our schedule. So if we're not going to play our in-conference games, why should we play our out-of-conference games where it's schools that may not be the big draw, may not get our advertising dollars, our concession dollars. We may not get the players, the plays that we want, or the TV time that we want. You know, if our games get canceled, are we going to be featured on ESPN as the featured game on the strength of being ASU? And I think that's what it eventually came down to. I don't think it was health, and even though it was couched in health and well-being of the players, which, right, as we've seen statistically speaking, the 18 to 25 year old crowd may get COVID, but they're not dying in droves. They're not having long-term serious health effects. They may get COVID, they isolate, and they're back to it. And we're seeing that in professional sports too. When the guys that are popping positive in the MLB right now are still staying healthy. They're not going on to ventilators. They're not taking up ICU space. They're bouncing back.
They're healthy. And that is what the statistics roundly show us. Every statistic you'll find on COVID-19 says this is a horrible disease for the at-risk population, which is those with serious other underlying health issues like morbid obesity, like diabetes, things like that.
Yeah.
But even with that, it's the elderly. I mean, look at the statistics. It's not even close. And so it's not that this poses a risk to people in that age group, because the statistics show that influenza, other things are much greater risk to people in that age group. So if we're going to stop football and fall sports because of this, then we are never going to have fall sports, because there are so many other things out there that you can catch for this age group. All right, so that's number one. Number two, then you have long-term health consequences. All right, I get that. We don't know that. But you know what? We're not going to know that for another 50 years, right? You're not going to know the impact of COVID-19, how it will impact someone in their grandpa years until they're a grandpa. We just won't know that. And so are we going to just stop all sports for 50 years so we can study the long-term impact? Of course not. And so what the people are wanting to know is, why did you cancel fall sports? Is it fear porn? Is that why you canceled it? I think the answer is yes. And it sounds like you are not going to readily disagree with me. Can you think of any other reason why they might have done this, canceled fall sports?
I think fear porn has a lot to do with it, and a lot of what fear porn unpacks down into cancel culture, or, you know, the idea of we have to do everything perfectly every single time, or we can't do anything at all. The idea that we have to have 100% agreement on everything before we move forward is another reason. I think a lot of things get murdered by committee, and you get enough people in there. I also think that they don't take into consideration, because COVID is so novel and it's so new, they didn't take into consideration. And what Fauci was saying is, this is what we know right now.
Right.
This is what we know as of today. We don't know anything else. This is what we know as of today. And people took that as like gospel truth for the entire thing.
Right.
And it's like, that's not, it's developing. We're learning about it. I don't know of an organization right now that the U.S. is involved with that's doing a lot of like shared testing or shared operations and sharing data. So we're all just kind of out here in the ocean trying to figure out what's going on, when in the distance we could swim to an island and be fine. But we're going to just hang out here and figure it out.
So the Big Ten held this meeting with the other power conferences, I think, to bully them on board. Say, hey, look, guys, we want you to join us. We don't want to be out there on an island by ourselves.
Right.
Well, again, here's another interesting thing, which I don't know if you can comment on due to your position at a Pac-12 school. I just find it interesting. The Pac-12 joined the Big Ten, and guess what? No one cares. No one is talking about the Pac-12 canceling sports. It's like nobody even cares. All the focus is on the Big Ten making such a horrendous decision, and no one is even saying boo about the Pac-12. Is that, now you live in Pac-12 land? Is it different out there, or have I assessed it correctly?
I think the reason also why the Big Ten is getting the attention is because the Big Ten also had the lawsuit.
Right.
The Pac-12 joined on, and then we're just like, we're going to push it out till spring and go from there. I can tell you from personal experience with season ticket holders, there is a lot of anger. Just because I mean, working for ASU, I'm a visual person of ASU, luckily working at the law school and having nothing to do with athletics.
Right.
But, you know, when I'm dealing with employers and I'm talking with firm partners and guys that, you know, they're double, triple devils, right? Which mean they came for undergrad, they got their law degree, and then they got their LLM. We call that a triple devil. Or you're a double devil. You got your undergrad and you got your law degree from ASU. You get these guys that are double and triple devils. They're the season ticket holders. They bring clients to the games. Like, this is part of their business development as a local Phoenix firm. And so those people are just up in arms about it and screaming about it. But we're not getting national attention because we're not doing things like leading the march. We're internally dealing with it. We're trying to help our people who have season. And I can't speak for the other Pac-12 teams. I don't know what they're going through. But for ASU, we're doing as much as we can to make sure our fan base is understanding our decision. And President Crow, Michael Crow, is the president of ASU. He's doing everything he can to reopen the campus. I think we are in week one, two. We're in mid third week of instructions. We're still having live classes at ASU Law. We're having people physically distanced.
Right.
We're having everybody in the classroom wears a mask, including the instructor. You have the choice of being on a Zoom meeting in the class or being physically in the class. When you're physically in the class, you enter through one door, you exit through another door. When you enter into the classroom, you grab sanitizing wipes. You wipe down your seat and you keep the sanitizing wipe through the class, and then you wipe it again when you leave. Throw away the sanitizing wipe as you leave. Seats are spaced 6 feet apart, and people are adapting, and they're glad to be back in school. I mean, if you walked around our campus right now, you would see blue painter's tape on every public space because we've marked off what 6 feet is to the surrounding area around you. So that way it makes it easier for law students to just sit down and go, I don't have to try to figure out what the 6 feet is.
What I like about that is it seems like you guys recognize, yes, there is danger. We get that where there's uncertainty, but we are going to do the best that we can. We're going to put these precautionary measures in place. We're going to do common sense things. We're going to wear the mask. We're going to socially distance because that seems to be the best way to handle this. But we're not going to just hole up and stop living our lives. And so I love that approach to it. It does seem interesting that in the Pac-12, you guys are doing live classes, which is more than what a lot of other schools are doing. I'm thinking right now in the Big 12, KU and K-State are almost about ready to shut down live classes and just go strictly to online. I have a son at K-State, so I'm getting some of that information that way. But we're doing football, but they're in the Pac-12. You guys seem to be doing the classroom but then you're going to shut down fall sports. Well, that brings us to this lawsuit. So again, I don't know if I've told you this, but my favorite college team, I grew up idolizing this team. You got Mike Rozier, you got Johnny Rogers, you got Turner Gill, my beloved Nebraska Cornhuskers. And yes, we do have some history with ASU. I still remember the game where Jake the Snake Plummer ripped our hearts out, stomped on it. Do you know the game I'm talking about?
I do.
Oh, it was a horrible game. I'm telling you what, I know where I was sitting at the moment I saw that game. It has that much of an imprint on my life. But nonetheless, I love Nebraska football. And so when they canceled the Big Ten season, the football season, the first word out of Nebraska was, well, okay, then we'll just have our own season. Now, Chris, I got to ask you this. What's so bad about that? I mean, if the Big Ten wants to say we're not going to do fall sports, then why shouldn't Nebraska be able to, for that one season, all right, we'll go ahead and just play a full slate of non-conference games? Why is that so bad?
Because you can't defect during this
time. But why?
Time.
I'm asking for policy reasons behind that.
Policy reasons? There's no good policy reasons. It's idiotic at best.
Yeah. I mean, it's a control, 100% control thing. The Big Ten was saying, nope, if we're not playing football, you're not playing football either. Right. It's control. We don't want you to make us look stupid. And I got to tell you, I think a better approach from the Big Ten should have been something like this. look, we are a conference that runs a large part of the United States. We have a school in New York, you know, Rutgers, New Jersey, right there, pretty close to New York City. We have a school in Chicago, Northwestern University, and we have a school out there in Nebraska, much different. And so we got to think of the entire conference, so we're going to shut down. But if our various member schools want to play a non-conference slate this year, go for it. We just hope the best for you. Why didn't they do something like that?
Well, that's the same reason why they went to go get all of the top five, right? The Big 12, the Pac-10, ACC, SEC. Why they went back is because they wanted to say, look, we're all together. We're all united on this, that we're not going to play football at all because we don't think it's safe. Well, Big Ten,
we don't want to look stupid.
You don't get to make decisions for the entire country. I don't know who you think you are that the ruling board of the Big Ten, which I'd have to Google who that actually is.
Right.
You don't get to make football decisions for people in California. You don't get to make football decisions for people for Alabama. The state of Alabama would collapse.
Financially, socially,
education-wise, if Alabama didn't get to play football. I'm pretty sure their legislature would secede from the union at that point.
So why didn't the Big Ten just say, look, we are a conference that encompasses various different states and population densities. We know that one decision is not going to fit all, but we got to think of the entire conference. So we're no conference games this year, but do whichever you can do in the safety of your local area. That would have made sense. I don't understand why they did not do that.
I honestly think it's because they didn't feel that they could have control over what each school in their conference was doing and each school out of their conference. So it could have been an overabundance of caution. I'm the type of guy that likes to assume that people are acting out of the goodness of their heart. Now, okay. I know I was a criminal defense attorney and I worked in politics and now I work at a law school, but I at some point I have to hope, and this could be a total and complete crapshoot, and I could be completely wrong, and I have been many a times, but I'd like to hope that they were trying to do it from an abundance of caution and they didn't know what they were doing. What it's turning out to be is, with the same vigor that ignorant people proclaim their genius,
right,
is the vigor of the Big Ten proclaiming their moral superiority and obviously advanced medical knowledge. By the way, how many medical schools are research facilities in the Big Ten schools?
Just that is a good question. I have no idea. Right.
That somehow their knowledge or the pipeline of people that they're speaking to has given them this superior knowledge of what is and is not safe for the football players. And it needs to be addressed from two fronts. There's the idea of the liability or the protection of fans, employees, visitors coming to the park, coming to the arena.
Right.
And then there's the separate liability of players playing on the field. The MLB has already proven that you can play in a field.
Yes.
And you could put – the NBA has shown you could play in a bubble.
Right.
Right? We have these sports and they're going. And when a coronavirus scare pops up like we saw in St. Louis and Cincinnati and in Florida, they handled it. And then they got back to business as usual. What we're not seeing is football going, well, we're kind of similar to – baseball, that we're in an open stadium, we're different because we're full on contact. Let's go look at hockey. How has hockey handled this?
Right.
Because they're full on contact. They're spitting on people. They're sweating.
Yes.
They're making, you know, they're in a, you know, okay. So we could kind of take some of these elements from the other sports, and football's had the unprecedented, because that word has not been used enough.
Right.
Time of being able to be the last sport that starts. We've gone through a baseball, football, basketball, hockey season. And now football is starting up, so they have the benefits of seeing where all these other seasons have screwed up.
And, Chris, since we're piling on the Big Ten, let's just keep on doing it, because I don't understand why their decision could not have been consistent with what you just said. This is a work in progress. We are figuring things out. This is the 1st of August. Why don't we just push back our games until the end of September, 1st of October, and we will start then? All recognizing that if our world goes to hell in a handbasket and this thing turns really bad in September, we, of course, can just cancel everything altogether. Why would that not have been a preferred solution rather than just an all-out cancel until I don't even know when they're going to cancel. Because they say we're just postponing until the spring. No, you cannot play football in the spring. No.
It's not happening.
Not going to do it. Not right. with NFL talent on your roster.
Right.
Not going to happen. Also, they said, oh, we'll do it in the dead of winter. Oh, that's a really good idea. Yeah, during the height of flu season, why don't we go ahead and play indoors? What a great idea that is. And so none of their reasons.
Let's play in the frozen tundras of Lambeau Field.
Right.
Like when it's -2 degrees in New England or wherever you want to play at, and you're going to put football players out there.
You're not doing that in the height of flu season. You're going to talk about idiotic decision. And so I don't know why they just didn't take the approach of, you know what, we're going to start at the end of September, like the other power conferences have already done, recognizing that, yeah, we might have to pull the plug at the last minute because that's the world in which we live right now. I mean, let's just face it. No one's going to be surprised if the week before you pull the plug because the rates just skyrocketed. And so, I don't know. That I would have rather seen them just delay it. And by the way, do you know what has happened since the beginning of August regarding COVID-19? Numbers are dropping. Now, I do think they're going to go back up here momentarily as people enter school because I think that's just a natural right. consequence. But
of course.
That being said, hopefully they don't skyrocket and they level off after a shortened adjustment period. They came out with a new testing protocol. That means you don't have to stick something way up your nose to test you. It's a much less invasive testing procedure. And so it is now much more you're much more able to do widespread testing on a regular basis.
Right.
So you can test these athletes before they actually play. And so I think the Big Ten really messed up. So how, hang on, Chris, I don't expect you to answer this question, but how can they mess up that bad? It dawned on me the other day. I was just sitting around playing with numbers, and I know Nebraska makes about $150 million a year off of their football program. I mean, that's going to fund almost their entirety of their sports, right? That is the main dog right. there in Nebraska. And that's just the athletic department. We're not even talking about our local businesses that depend upon a football schedule. But nonetheless, right. they make $150 million every year. There's 14 schools. So right there, my quick math says that's about $2 billion,
indeed.
Right?
Minimum.
Wow, what a decision. That right. decision cost two. Have you ever made a decision in your life, Chris? I'm just curious. That ended up having a $2 billion impact?
Not yet, but I plan to at some point. That's
wow.
the goal.
$2 billion. He made a decision to pull the plug on $2 billion. I got to tell you, I'm with the other Nebraska players. All right. Can you please show me the evidence that you have? Because I got to tell you, the rest of the world is not seeing the same evidence, or else if we are seeing the same evidence, you guys are a bunch of cowards. You are giving into fear porn because there's absolutely no evidence out there that this is dangerous to people healthy, otherwise healthy, 20-year-olds, unless you're saying we are going to wait until we know more information. Well, newsflash, you're not going to know more information for another 50 years. So right. I don't know. Maybe I'm just frustrated.
I think that since we saw our first reported cases back in, well, if we start the reported cases back in China and we move through reported cases in the United States, the disease hasn't morphed. It hasn't changed. You're not all of a sudden getting like leprosy, or you're not
right.
all of a sudden like losing a limb, no. or losing feelings in your fingers, or it's not that you don't get coronavirus and then automatically have a heart attack. The disease
exactly.
itself has stayed fairly stable as a disease, right?
Right.
There's the symptoms. You know, you lose taste, you lose smell. So you have this. The disease isn't mutating into something crazy. We're not all of a sudden zombies. Which
right, right, right.
That's what I was really pulling for early on. Is that this was our zombie apocalypse moment, and I was finally going to live out the Zombieland fantasy, but it didn't work out that way for me.
Hey, you were all ready to go. You probably had your screen or your what is that called when you write something for Hollywood?
My screenplay.
Your screen. You're probably already your screenplay written. You're ready to go.
I was ready to go.
Oh my
I had my
goodness.
Preparations. I was. We had our bug out vehicle. We were ready to just go. But
can you imagine? Fast forward 5 to 10 years, the Hollywood movies that are going to come from this pandemic. Wow. And
yeah.
you know what? it's going to be scary because we're going to say, yeah, that's possible. You know, before, no, not possible. That's sci-fi, whatever. Alfred Hitchcock would be impressed. But now we're going to be going like, oh, I can see that. I can see that kind of terrorism. That could actually happen. That is not a far-fetched story. That actually could happen. All right, well, we've been dancing around this. Let's just get into the law, this lawsuit. We are lawyers. Mm-hmm. Nebraska, some players and some parents sued the Big Ten. And I believe the essence of their complaint, I read their complaint, and I know you've read their complaint. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of hard to unpack this complaint and see, is it a good one? Is it a bad one? I mean, at face value, it was a breach of contract claim. And so do you think they had merits as to their breach of contract claim?
I think they do. And I think that, you're right. It is a ton to unpack because you're not getting into the simple, you know, breach of contract. You said that you would sell me your car for $1,800. Right. You delivered $800. That's a breach.
Yes.
You know, we're not in that simple breach. We're talking about future earnings. We're talking about playtime. We're talking about, you know, the coach coming into your front room and telling your parents that you're the number one prospect in the nation, even though the numbers don't say that. We need you at Nebraska or Ohio State or wherever. We're looking at promissory estoppel. Did you promise me, you know, as a freshman going to Nebraska, did you promise me, you know, at least 60 minutes of playtime in several, you know, televised games? So I took Nebraska over, you know, over one of the other schools, over Alabama or over LS. Like, what did I do? Did I take Nebraska over Berkeley? And then you got to unpack it even further is because I believe it's next year, 2021 or 2022, when students can start getting endorsements.
Yes. Now let's unpack what you said there, because you've already said a lot. And so I want to unpack the first thing you said, privity of contract. And so these students, they are in somewhat privity of contract. I know to a certain extent they're an attended third-party beneficiary. In other words, they're not actually a member of this contract between the Big Ten and Nebraska or Big Ten and these various schools. So the students aren't actually signing off on that contract, but they are signing off on the contract with Nebraska. And they're saying, look, we are not going to go to another member institution and play football. We're going to go to you, and you do have a contract with the Big Ten. And I do think that these football players would be a third-party intended beneficiaries and could probably enforce some of these terms. And then the second thing you mentioned there was these players stand to gain a lot from playing season football. I assume you know who Joe Burrow is, right?
Of course.
Yeah, Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, number one pick in the draft this last year. Now, Chris, if they went to you 2 years ago and they asked you, hey, what are your thoughts on Joe Burrow?
Nothing.
Do you know what your response would have been?
He's not even on my radar.
Who is Joe Burrow?
Right.
Joe Burrow even himself said if he had not played his senior year, he would not be in the NFL. He would not be drafted. No one cared about it. He'd be selling insurance or cars somewhere. That last season meant the entire world to him. Without that last season, he would not be a professional football player. As it turned out, he is the number one pick in the draft millions and millions of dollars. So, yes, every single football season does make a difference. There is a lot on the line for these players and so that they want to play. All right, so you think, no, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you think there actually is merit to these breach of contract claims? But let's get to what they are seeking, because that's going to be the big deal here, right?
Right.
I know they got their foot in the door, but what is the relief that, number one, they are seeking, and then, number two, that maybe they could be seeking? What are your thoughts on that?
I thought it was a bit odd because they're not seeking more than $75,000.
Right. Why? Yeah, that was interesting.
And I don't know, and this is where my ignorance as being a West Coast lawyer is and not understanding the rules of some of the federal court stuff. If it went over $75,000, does it kick it up to a new, like, is it a civil unlimited case now? Because I know that they filed motions for expedited discovery.
Right.
If you're asking for more than $75,000, can you not get expedited discovery? Can you not get, you know, injunctive relief right off the bat? Can you not get a stay on the order to cancel football if you're trying to litigate millions and millions of dollars? Because I'm looking at these guys. There's eight students that are suing on behalf. Nebraska puts out between three and four NFL players every year from their program for the last 20 years. Some years it's been six, some years it's been two.
Embarrassing.
Right. So it's kind of sad, but it is what it, but there's eight players. Right. So the argument can be that of those eight players, likely four of them would have made it to the NFL, and a league minimum contract for the NFL is still in the 250 range.
Right.
So why are you suing for $75,000?
I do not know why they. There has to be a procedural reason why they did that, because here's where I'm going with this. What were they really seeking to accomplish? Because this, I know we have ethical, you know, quandaries that limit us as lawyers. We can't sue someone to harass them.
Right.
But I don't think they actually were suing the Big Ten to win that lawsuit. I think they're trying to force
the Big Ten to explain why they're canceling football. Because if there's a legitimate reason, we can all be in agreement that if there's an actual legitimate reason, like Big Ten has a direct pipeline into, you know, the coronavirus, and they have, you know, insider knowledge that we don't know about the changing of the disease and how it goes. Maybe they do. Likely they don't. They're just being bullies. But I think the lawsuit is to force them to say something other than we're canceling the season. We saw that here in Arizona, right? Governor Ducey decided to close down gyms, bars, movie theaters, and water parks in the height of summer. Okay. And people are like, why? And he goes, well, those are hotbeds for coronavirus, with no actual proof that those are hotbeds for coronavirus.
Right.
So went to the state Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, Ducey, you got to tell us something. You got, like, we're fine with your governor's powers to shut down businesses in times of medical emergencies, pandemics, we get it. Explain to us why these four locations are not just some words on a dartboard that you're throwing darts at.
Right. You're guessing.
And he couldn't do it, so they opened them all back up.
Interesting.
And though the Big Ten is not akin to a governor's power to shut down a state, I think that's what this lawsuit's trying to say is, like, look, the small area of stewardship that you have, which is these 10 teams in this conference, why? Why are you shutting it down? Why are you putting all of our futures on the line, claiming it's quote unquote for your best interest?
Yes, this is putting immense amount of political pressure. When I say political pressure, I guess I should mean public pressure on the Big Ten to, okay, explain yourself. We're not going to let you get away with this without explaining yourself. Put your name on the line. Tell us exactly why you did this, because we all see the same stats that you're seeing, and we don't see the unless you're giving into fear porn, we don't see why you should be shutting down football, limiting our children's career opportunities, and this will impact their career opportunities, jeopardize our kids' health if you want to play a spring season on top of another fall season next year. Explain yourself. And this is putting some pressure. Now, the Big Ten has yet to explain themselves. The best they have done is they said, hey, look, we took a vote, and it was what, 11-3? Yeah, that's the best that they have done so far. They have yet to actually explain why they came to that decision. Now, my best guess is they won't, because they can't. There is no other secret, you know, vault of information that only the Big Ten has. They're going to have to say, yeah, we just were scared, and that's why we did this. Will they move the football season back up? Can they do that and save face? Because, you know, that's going to be a big deal. I do know the rumors already out there that they are thinking about a Thanksgiving start, but then that quickly was shifted away. I then even heard this morning an October start. But if they're not going to do a Thanksgiving start, I don't see them doing an October start. But I got to tell you, they have really rolled the dice on this one. They have risked a lot. Yeah. Because what if the Big 12 – the SEC and the ACC go through this fall season pretty much unblemished, that there aren't really any new cases. The new cases that do pop up, they dealt with it by saying, we'll just cancel that game and move on to the next one. What if that is the actual outcome, that is that they could have done it? What will that say about the Big Ten, and especially to recruits of the Big Ten in the future?
This has such long, long, long results. Like, we're going to be looking at the effects of coronavirus in 50 years, you're going to have to look at schools 20 years down the road of trying to rebuild programs. If we thought that the Penn State scandal, that decimated their football program was bad. How bad is the program going to be decimated for these Big Ten schools?
Yes. Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
Because now you have kids that are legit NFL prospects going to other schools now that aren't in the Big Ten. Who would know? Like BYU all of a sudden is going to have 18 potential NFL players because they're out of conference and they get to play all the games they want to play.
Yeah, if I were a stud player and I was thinking about the between the SEC, the ACC, and the Big Ten, you know those recruiters are going to be saying, hey, look, the Big Ten, they are controlled by presidents who give in to fear porn. They are willing to jeopardize your career based upon no evidence. They're just going to run scared. That's the leadership you have that you have in the Big Ten, so come play for our school. I get that. Let's just, for completeness sake, assume that that's not what happens. Let's assume that the world just comes to a crashing halt and these college kids can't control themselves and the coronavirus just sweeps through the campuses, hits everyone, and they have to pretty much cancel all football seasons.
Which is not out of the realm of possibility.
Right. Oh, these are college kids. They are
right.
College
kids. I was a frat boy in college. I get it. Yes. I totally understand the social distancing aspect of going to college. ASU is seeing that now. We implemented very strict rules for everybody coming back to campus. If you live in an ASU dorm, you're not allowed to have visitors in your ASU dorm. If you are in a fraternity, there's special rules and requirements for everybody. If you're a law school student, there's rules. If you're in the grad program, all of these rules have been implemented, and we're still seeing of the 33,000 population of students that we have. We're in school 2 weeks now, 2+ weeks, and we already have 480 cases that were positive that weren't positive 2 weeks ago at the start of school.
Right.
So though that's an incredibly low number, I'm not trying to say that, oh my gosh, we're being rampant with COVID. That's not true at all. But we're seeing that students can't control one another. They just can't.
Right.
And let's be honest, I'm 18 years old. I just moved out of backwards area, nowhere, Arizona, and now I'm in Tempe at ASU, and there's all these new people and new ideas, and there's all these girls and all these parties and all these everything. I'm going to want to live that college life.
Yes. And here's another reality. I had a friend of mine who recently came down with COVID, and she was a younger person, actually on my tennis team. And she came down with COVID, and you know what? I think it was some sniffles for a day. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Sniffles. So these college kids are probably saying, yeah, I don't really care about the sniffles. I just don't. You haven't moved me here to change what I want to do over the sniffles. It's just, so I do fear that these college kids aren't going to treat this seriously, but nonetheless, maybe the college campuses will make them clamp down. I do know the fear of God has been instilled in these football players. I know they have been told, because like Michigan, they're telling their players, look, guys, you play this straight. You got to follow these rules. We are a football team. If any of you messes up, you've hurt everyone else on this football team, and you probably know the stats. Jim Harbaugh was bragging about it. I think the last 800 tests, zero positives there amongst the football team. So I do think that the football program, the football players should be able to play it close by the rules. But you know what? It will be very fascinating to watch and see what happens. But I do think, let's say that the other schools have to cancel the football season. Well, now the Big Ten is, could argue we were on the forefront, but I still don't think they're any better off. Because I think all the other schools were going to say is they were just quick to the trigger. But nonetheless, we all got there, but we thought, why cancel early? We were going to wait until we actually had to cancel before we, you know, signed off on your senior or your last season. So I don't know. Any final thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think the Big Ten has missed a huge opportunity. So even if they're right, in a world, let's say that they're right, you have an opportunity to bring your students back. You have an opportunity to train with these guys. Practices are invaluable when it comes to this type of organization. You have an opportunity to build team chemistry. You have an opportunity to continue in some sort of structure, which a lot of these college kids need to survive and to succeed. You are now blowing all of this ancillary ideas off because you want to be right. So even if you are right, you've missed a golden opportunity to invest in your students to show them that we have the best interest, your best interest in mind. Believe us, we have your best interest in mind.
Right.
We are going to prepare like we're still going to play because that's in your best interest, but we're not going to hesitate to pull the trigger and cancel the program if that's in your best interest.
Man, Chris, the, I just
the,
do not.
The decision
understand.
Was made long before we even considered what the best interest of the sport, the economy, the family, the college. It was made long before that because they didn't want to have to deal with anything.
Now, man, Chris, I got to tell you, I just do not understand why the Big Ten made that decision. I really don't. I'm scratching my head on this one. I've been thinking about it for weeks now, and I know I have a little bit of a dog in this fight. I'm a huge Nebraska fan, and I do think that the world in Nebraska is far different than the world in New Jersey or in Chicago. Huh? And so I am a little bit bitter when it comes to that, but I just, I got to tell you, it's let's analyze then this legal issue. Liability. Now, I do think another major player in the response to COVID is fear of lawyers. They don't want to be sued, right? And no one wants to be sued. And so because there's this big fear for lawyers, they're going to take the easy road and just cancel the football season because no one can sue them if they just cancel. Well, let's unpack that. I do know a waiver.
So
I mean,
much.
Everyone who participates in one of these events can sign a waiver saying I will not sue the university if I participate in these activities. So is the waiver the answer here, or does the school have some liability through maybe a negligence standard? Because I know you can't waive away your own negligence. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and that's a tough one too, right? Are we in a position where now the schools are – and what does the waiver look like? I think I should start there. What does the waiver look like? You waive your right to sue the school if you get sick. If you choose not to play, do you still get your scholarship? Do you still get your housing? Do you still get all of that stuff? Is that in the waiver? I haven't seen one of these waivers that have actually been executed. But if you're now putting the student's entire life at stake of education and housing and employment and all that, that may be a little bit different because now – you have a lot more as the college, a lot more to bargain with than you do as the student. So does that create a lopsided agreement here where it's either you play football and you waive your right to sue or you're done at Nebraska or any other school?
So it would have to be an equal waiver where there was no force. And I would imagine assuming the politics of it and just the optics of it, that if you did have a waiver, I would want it to say, look, if you play football this year, you're waiving any rights to sue us if you catch COVID or anything else. Mm-hmm. But if you choose not to play, you still have your scholarship. You can still participate. You can still go to classes here. You don't lose a year of eligibility. They would have to do that or else you're right. I do think it would be it would be hard to enforce that in a court of law. Now, I do know a general principle in law is that you cannot waive your own negligence. That's not something you can do in law, but you can assume the risk, but still that would not excuse these Big Ten schools from exercising the proper duty of care. And so I would have to think in this day and age of the ever-evolving standard as far as what should be done, that might be easily met. But that is something to consider. Nebraska or any of these Big Ten schools could not say, we're going to stop sterilizing. We're going to stop doing whatever we're doing because we just want you to go out and play football.
Right.
No, they still have to do their proper duty of care because you cannot waive away your own negligence.
Well, and that the standard of care is fluid. It's not like this is – especially in something like COVID. If Nebraska comes out there and goes, this is what we did. We hired on, 10 new medical technicians before every practice, everyone is tested. And before practice can come back, everyone's negative. We do it before every game. We do it before, every morning when they wake up, the first thing they have to do is report to the athletic department and get tested. Like there's ways that you could set up a standard of care that isn't a negligence action. You can go out of your way to make sure that the standard of care is so high that when they talk about, you had a duty, did you breach your duty? Like, we didn't breach our duty. This is our standard of care. And when you take that element out, it's no longer a negligence thing. And everybody can you can waive away a simple assault. You can waive away, anything that effect if the standard of care was there. But that goes back to my original argument, a half hour ago, where we talked about dollars and cents. Cash-wise, giving up $140 million, was that cheaper for Nebraska and the Big Ten, a $2 billion decision, was that cheaper than what they thought the long-term effects were of hiring medical staff, patrolling the students, possible lawsuits, right? Because right. if you equate this to the normal world, like if it's a products liability case with the Firestone case, right, where it was bad tires, you take what's going to be the cost of litigation versus what's going to be the cost of replacing everybody's tires and whatever cheaper you're going to do.
Right.
And so is that how the Big Ten made their decision, was going, well, if we get – if we have 100 players come down with COVID and die and their families sue us, if each player is worth, you know, $1 million, that's $100 million that we're out. But
– fascinating.
It's and I think it might have been this kind of emotional detached discussion of pure dollars and cents. And right, that right. may have been why they got 11 of – the 14 voting teams in the Big Ten to go along with it, because schools like Ohio State, they make a lot more money than schools like University of Illinois or University of Maryland.
Oh yeah, clearly, right.
Right. Yeah, so for OSU, they may be losing $2 billion on their own. Not as a Big Ten, but they may be losing $2 billion on their own, going, look, if we get 50 players that come down with COVID and we end up paying out $10 million to each player, that's still $500 million. We're still making $1.5 billion.
Right, right.
So we're willing to make that decision. Whereas Nebraska and the Big Ten was like, overall, that's just liability that we're not willing to take on.
So maybe if the commissioners were really truthful, they would have said, because what they did say was, look, we made this decision after consultation with our medical personnel, our scientists, you know, the best minds when it comes to the medical community. They probably should have added, and there are lawyer, and upon our lawyer's advice, because maybe that played a part.
You know they talked to their lawyers. You know that, you know, either Office of General Counsel for all the universities were involved, outside counsel was involved. You know that the lawyers were brought in. Why? Because we're the first people everybody calls.
Right, right.
You call 911, you call your lawyer.
All right, let's just take the moment we have here left to unpack one last issue, and that is the lawsuit. Let's assume that someone sued a Big Ten school. I don't want to say Nebraska. I love Nebraska. So let's say they sued Northwestern because one of their kids got COVID. Do you not like Northwestern?
No, I'm down with that. Let's do it.
All right, good. Let's do it. We're suing Northwestern because our client got COVID playing for your university. Now, they would allege, they did not. They did them. We're going to have to allege that they violated their duty of care. So they were acting negligently. Now, we're going to offer up to the court, look, this is the standard of care in the industry. Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, the other side will say, Northwestern will say, no, look, we did better than the standard of care in the industry. Our experts say that the standard of care is whatever. Yeah. Use Clorox wipes and you guys just used Purell, whatever. Right. Who decides that? Is that's a legal question for the court and not the jury. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so this would be decided at a court level. It would never get to the jury, because that would be the big fear, I would think, for universities. Don't get this in front of a Chicago jury, right? That's not, we don't want that. If this is going to go in front of a Chicago jury, we're just going to just bail out right now, go ahead and close the doors of the school.
Yeah, we're completely done.
Yeah, exactly. So this would be decided by the court. And if the court got it wrong, that then would be appealed to the state Supreme Court. I don't see that being, of course, a U.S. Supreme Court issue, but at least at the state court, I would think the state court would decide that. So I think the risk is there, though it's somewhat de minimized, because this would be a legal issue decided by the courts. And surely the courts would be smart enough to recognize, no, this is COVID-19. No one even knows what's going on. Everyone is doing the best that they can as far as what is the latest in medical, you know, information, scientific information. And so they probably would not violate their standard of care. But you know what? That's a very interesting thought as to how that would all go down.
Right. And I think that with getting in front of a jury is going to be bad any way you look at it. There is no way you're going to get 12 impartial, well, even in a civil case, 9 impartial people to – unless you have, you know, 12 Big Ten fans up there wearing their Nebraska Cornhuskers shirts, it's going to go bad. It's going to go bad for the universities. If you give this the court of public opinion, it's going to go bad. And again, because we're not medical experts. And we've been locked up in our houses for 4 months.
Right.
Could we please not be locked up in our houses anymore. Or if we are locked up in our houses, give us something that's normal. Give us football on Saturday. Give us football on Sunday. Give us something. Give us – placate the masses here, people. But they're not. And the Big Ten is showing that they're I think it's a dollars and cents issue. That's exactly what they're going into. How can we spend the least amount of money?
Well, Chris, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you so much for joining me and talking about these, I think, fun sports and legal issues. Because I can tell you, I love sports and I love the law. So you can combine the two, I am in heaven. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
See you on the golf course.
Will do.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a complete and utter mess. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do, and Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.